So you're very welcome back to Northside Today and to Near FM. I'm joined now in the studio by Ordvera Micheál McDonagher, who has very kindly come in today to discuss the homelessness situation in Dublin. Very welcome to Near FM, Ordvera.
Thanks, and it's great to be here again.
And because you are, of course, an alumni of Near FM.
Indeed, yeah. I, for a number of years, I had a radio programme. I had a traditional music programme on the station, which I enjoyed very much. And of course, I'm a big fan of the station. But I wouldn't be competent now to go behind the desk because it's the technology has come on since I was here.
So you might press the buttons, which, like, unfortunately, happened in one part of the world over the weekend.
We won't talk about that.
We'll brush over that. But the reason that we are here today to talk about a situation that has been dominating the headlines, the homelessness in both Ireland and in Dublin. Now, you have recently written to the Taoiseach and you've had a meeting with him to outline some of your thoughts on
that. That's right, yeah. Well, it's customary for the Ardmhéara, the Lord Mayor of Dublin, to meet the Taoiseach. And that meeting took place last Monday, this day week. And the main issue that I wanted to highlight with him is the housing crisis, the housing emergency that we've had now for a number of years.
Now, just to stop you there, I mean, the language over what we're calling this is something that's being debated. Crisis is something that perhaps people have been billing it as. But to declare a national emergency which would activate European funding, you are saying that you do think this is
absolutely. I mean, if we've always said that whether it's declared an emergency or not, that the government should be saying to the EU that this is a critical situation, crisis, emergency, whatever you want to call it, that means that normally EU rules should not apply. For example, the restriction on government borrowing, the over strict procurement rules, these things are, they are an obstacle to the government putting in place the type of major social and affordable housing programme that we need. But I think the problem is at a government level that unfortunately they're still wedded to a policy that has failed, and that's a market-driven, market-dominated policy.
So in terms of your letter, I've got that here in front of me. I mean, you outline obviously the last set of statistics which came out just before Christmas. There are 3,333 children living in emergency accommodation, nearly 9,000 people overall. And as you point out, what you say in the letter is that it's the tip of a massive iceberg, and you refer to social housing and also affordable housing. Can you tell me what you mean? Obviously, there's the issue of people sleeping on the streets. That's one aspect of it. What are you highlighting here in your letter?
The housing crisis, the emergency, is by no means confined to to people on the streets, to people in hostels, or indeed to people in emergency accommodation, even though we now have 9,000. And that's a horrendous figure. But as I say, that is the tip of the iceberg. There are many, many thousands who are not properly housed, who are housed in bad, overcrowded conditions. On Dublin City Council housing waiting list alone, we have some 20,000 applicants. Many of those would be families. So the crisis is really, really deep. There are many, many people who are not captured in the statistics because their income may be too high to actually go on the council housing waiting list, but rents are too high and they cannot afford a mortgage in the private sector, or indeed in some cases rents in the private sector. So they may be living with parents, they may be living with relatives or friends, and there's a huge tranche of people in those categories. So this crisis goes across the board. So we need social housing, we need council housing urgently. We also need affordable housing, and that means accommodation that's affordable to rent in the private sector and affordable to buy as well, because now we have people even on fairly reasonable incomes who have no hope at present of getting a mortgage to purchase their own home. So all of these issues need to be tackled. But the only way it will be tackled is by a government response that is comprehensive, led by a major social and affordable housing programme of construction and purchase of homes.
And in terms of, I mean, that's a long, I mean, do you see that as a medium to long term solution?
Absolutely, and but it must start now. It has to start as soon as possible. Now, the government has made a kind of a stuttering start to a certain extent, but nowhere near the programme that we need.
And so the Housing Minister, Owen Murphy, was on the RTE programme looking at this before Christmas. And I think he committed to 2,000 units over the course of the year, which was criticised by Inner City Helping Homeless. They said that was, I think, maybe a fifth of what's required.
That's right.
Do you think that what they're proposing in terms of units is reasonable?
No, no, it's far from enough. And there is general agreement among people who, you know, in the sector, you mentioned Inner City Helping Homeless, there are many other groups as well, and political parties, that we're looking at, we need a figure of about 10,000 social housing units and affordable housing provided every year. That is what we need at this stage. And the idea that, you know, 2,000 would be enough, and I mean, even that figure is questionable if that will be delivered. Because, you know, there have been issues about the way the government has presented statistics. So, no, we need a major step change in government policy. That's what's needed.
And where, you know, to ask maybe an obvious question, where's the money going to come from?
Well, we have estimated that the money is there in the current fiscal space, as it's called, but it's a matter of choices. Now, the current government is choosing to give tax breaks and tax cuts. They are choosing to go in that direction rather than to spend on essential infrastructure, essential not only social need but economic need, because it's a false economy if we do not solve the housing crisis on the basis of, oh, we don't, you know, we can't afford it. We can't afford not to, because it is now having a seriously bad effect on the economy in two ways. First of all, so much income is now being absorbed by high rents and mortgages. Excessive rents and excessive mortgages, that is taking money out of the economy, which is unproductive. It goes nowhere. And secondly, for Dublin in particular, there is a disincentive now for companies to invest in Dublin because of the housing situation. What happens to their workforce in terms of trying to find accommodation? And that is now generally recognised as a major problem. So our ability to attract inward investment is now being affected by the housing crisis.
Should we, though, as a country, when we're looking to bring new businesses into Ireland, and obviously Brexit has had some impact on that as well, I mean, we shouldn't be so Dublin-centric, though, should we? You know, if housing's short in Dublin, you know, why don't we send them down to Kilkenny or Limerick or Galway and let them see?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with that, and I don't go for this approach of Dublin versus the rest of the country. I think we need to act as a country, and certainly there is over concentration of population in Dublin and of economic activity that needs to be spread around. At the same time, it's better to have inward investment in Dublin than not at all.
Sure.
And unfortunately, that's often the choice. These companies will either come to Dublin or not come to Ireland at all. While that is the case, we need to ensure that accommodation is provided. And I mean, there are also imaginative ways. In some cases, companies are willing to make a contribution to the housing situation, sometimes by providing housing for their own workforce. That would be a contribution. But the government needs to be much more proactive on this.
And is that happening already, those kind of creative
approaches?
There is
in a tentative way. You know, I wouldn't be across all the detail of it, but I, you know, I've heard of examples of it. But there's no reason why it couldn't be done in a more comprehensive way. Mm. That's another avenue that the government should explore.
Absolutely. And, you know, even though obviously you're saying don't take a Dublin centric approach. It's well known that across the country rents are also rising, and places like Cork and Galway are actually, the rents there are actually just as crazy as Dublin, so they're not exempt from what's going on in Dublin.
Absolutely, yeah.
Either.
And I mean, there needs to be a better legal protection for tenants against rising rents, and also against the threat of notices to quit, which are now being issued very widely, and they are driving people unnecessarily into homelessness.
And how can we achieve that in legislative terms?
Well, I think the legislation needs to be toughened. For example, if a landlord is selling to another landlord to maintain a property as a rented property, the tenant should not have to quit. That shouldn't be the case. Similarly, we see situations where tenants are being told that the landlord wishes to sell, and lo and behold, when the tenants leave, they find that, well, no, he didn't sell. He took in tenants on higher rents. So that needs to be prohibited.
So are you suggesting a cap?
Well, certainly. We need a proper proper rent control. The current position is not, it's not really working. And we definitely need, there are bills that have been proposed in the Dáil by my own party, Sinn Féin, and by others, and these have been blocked by the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil dominant parties in the Dáil. So it can be done, but it needs to be done. However,
if you look at Germany, for example, at the moment, Angela Merkel's having problems having brought in such a measure and is now being told it's not constitutional and it might be thrown out again. So even if you can bring in such a thing, sometimes it's hard to also administer a rent cap, even if you can.
Well,
those
difficulties have been raised, but I think they need to be met. And I mean, I would go so far as to say if it requires a referendum, then so be it. Let us have the referendum. It could be held in conjunction with the Eighth Amendment.
On the issue of rent caps?
Well, if it's found that the Constitution is in any way proving to be an unnecessary obstacle in a comprehensive approach to solving the housing problem, well, then constitutional change should be looked at. However, that said, I don't believe it is necessary. I believe that there are enough weapons in the government's arsenal, legislatively and economically, to achieve that without constitutional change.
But certainly if there were, whilst another one's, everyone's going to the ballot box anyway, we've certainly got an upcoming opportunity.
I think that it's probably unnecessary.
Absolutely.
I think it's all about the government being determined to actually solve the problem. And as I said at the outset, unfortunately, I think they are still wedded to a market approach, and that's certainly the attitude in the circles in which you move. They move, if you like, because, for example, we had the AIB report today seeking tax breaks for developers, which is completely the wrong way to go, and for landlords, because those type of tax breaks were used in the Celtic Tiger, and we saw where that led. So that is completely the wrong approach. If money is to be foregone, why should it be foregone in tax breaks? It should rather be spent on constructing and purchasing the homes that are needed.
Well, if you talk to a lot of ordinary people, and I did a report from the concert protest outside Leinster House, I talked to a lot of people on the streets, and some of the people were saying to me, just ordinary people, they couldn't really understand the common sense side of it. They're like, why take money, give all this money to private landlords rather than building from the state, and then you own it and the money comes back in? They just found that very difficult to grow.
Well, there's a very simple explanation, and that is, unfortunately, the current government represents landlords and the interests of developers.
What do you mean they represent landlords?
Well, they actually represent them.
Do you mean that a lot of TDs are themselves landlords?
Yes, and also they electorally, they represent their interests, unfortunately. Even though a lot of the people who vote for them are not of that interest, but there are obviously powerful interests, and as in any country, the more conservative parties will represent those interests, and that has to be recognised. So, but they were elected to represent all the people, so They're not fulfilling their responsibility, in my opinion.
And we are now as in an emergency situation, as you've described. So can you talk me through, and I know you talk about this in some detail in the letter, some of these more longer term solutions which involve, as you've outlined, the provision of social housing units and yes. Dublin City Council doing
Well,
that.
Absolutely. I mean, the point I made, and I made to the teacher, and I've repeatedly made, and others have, This is not rocket science. This is not some new innovation we're looking for. This was done in the past under governments of both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Housing was provided on a very large scale, both council housing and government supported affordable private housing for purchase. This was done very widely. The area we're in now, in the north side of Dublin, across Coolock, Dunamead, Artane, all those areas across this whole district, they were predominantly council housing and purchased housing that was purchased with the support, in many cases, of what they were then Dublin Corporation loans. So all of this has been done before. There's no reason why it can't be done again. And in fact, it was done when the state had far less revenue than it does now.
But some might say that in the 90s, what happened in wasn't successful. What would you?
Well, I would disagree. I think people were housed. We didn't have the extent of housing need that we have now. Now, in many cases, estates weren't properly planned because of the levels of unemployment, particularly in the 80s and early 90s. There were a lot of social problems there. But that can be addressed through proper planning. That you do have mixed income estates, that you do provide community facilities, that you do ensure that people in employment can afford to have their own homes. So, I mean, these things are, we can learn from the lessons of the past, but it doesn't mean that we preclude, as this government does, any concept of developing major mixed income estates, as was done in the past.
And the fact is that some solution has to be found. So in your letter to Leo Varadkar, you talk about housing developments being council-led and funded by the Department of Housing or the Housing Finance Agency borrowing, a sufficient stream of capital funding and or HFA borrowing. You talk about public land being used for the provision of public housing, land currently held by public bodies, including the Office of Public Works, to be released to Dublin City Council.
That's correct. Unfortunately, what we have at the moment is we have these different state and semi-state agencies operating in silos. So they often operate as if they're a private company and that the land is not public land, but it's part of their asset as a company, rather than it is a public asset. And all of these lands should be examined. Would they be suitable for housing? If so, they should be released to the local authorities to provide housing land, because in the end of the day, they're there to serve the public interest.
And you also highlight some of the kind of rapid build homes that Dublin City Council has been involved in. 39 in Finglas, 24 in Cherry Orchard, 29 in Drimna and 34 here in Coolock. And at work on another 53 has started in Cherry Orchard. Can you talk about, we were talking about the number of units Owen Murphy had committed to. If you were able to get this money allocated to you, what kind of units are you looking at in terms of numbers?
Well, they could be the rapid build units. I visited the rapid build units here in Coolock, and I was very impressed with them. They're a very high standard. Because they're rapid build doesn't mean that they're any less high standard. They're actually very fine houses, and that can be done. It's also possible to provide apartments on a similar basis, a more rapid construction but high standard. So that again is eminently possible. The scale we're talking about at present is very, very small. that can be replicated and it can be done in a well-planned way.
And do you see that type of housing as short-term housing, or do you think that actually
I think there was a lot of confusion at the start because of the way it was presented. Mm-hmm. It was presented almost as prefabs and all of that kind of stuff. That's not what has been constructed. These are high standard homes, permanent homes, and that's what we need to see put in place. We've had enough temporary solutions between hotel, bedrooms, B&B, emergency accommodation. We have the family hubs. They're a slight improvement on hotels and B&Bs, but they are a temporary fix, and we don't need temporary fixes. We need permanent solutions. We need infrastructure. The proper housing infrastructure is even more important than roads or light or water, all of those things. You need housing as well. You cannot have a society and an economy if you do not have your population adequately housed.
And in terms of then those services you're talking about, obviously you have a plan, it's for the future, there is the rapid build element, but a lot of the social housing, it's going to take a little bit of time to put that in place. In terms of the short-term solutions and things that can be done in terms of the wraparound solutions, I know that people are going from night to hostels. People have said maybe needs to be on a weekly basis. Or also provision of addiction services, mental health services, because there are often people, vulnerable people, who need help when they're in this situation. What can be done on that side of things?
Well, additional beds were provided at the end of 2017, and they have had an impact on the horrendous rough sleeping situation that we've had in the city. There has been some improvement in that. But as you say, we do need the wraparound services. We do need for services for people who perhaps don't want to go into hostel accommodation because maybe they don't like an atmosphere where there's addiction and so on. There are maybe others who need more comprehensive services, who maybe do need more assistance in terms of addiction. As you say, that there may be, we need to ensure that there are more longer term beds, that it's not night to night. There needs to be assistance for people who may indeed have the prospect of employment. I have tried to assist one constituent who is in a situation of night-to-night hostel accommodation. However, this person has a chance of employment, but he can only take up that employment if he has somewhere permanent to live, because it's just not sustainable to work and live in a hostel in those circumstances. So all of those issues need to be addressed. There's no question about it.
And, I mean, why wasn't more done to limit this in the first place? I mean, we're in the middle of what you're saying is an emergency. You're calling on the government to declare this an emergency and for that to be at an EU level. We must have seen this coming. This is a long time to get
well,
to
I
this
do believe
state.
That, I do believe that Dublin City Council saw it coming. The Dublin Regional Housing Executive saw it coming, and the various different voluntary agencies that work on the housing issue certainly saw this coming down the tracks, and they did warn, we did warn government about what was happening, the ever spiralling issue of homelessness and the ever spiralling housing crisis and the ever spiralling rent rises and so on, and that supply, it's all about supply. Unfortunately, we weren't listened to, and only laterally some measures have been taken, but it's very late in the day. This is not a new problem. If you even go back to the Celtic Tiger era, in that period, the smallest proportion of social housing was constructed as a percentage of the overall housing output. So that was storing up trouble for the future, because it meant that the stock of housing for people who needed it was diminishing while the population was increasing. And then, of course, we had the economic collapse, which made things infinitely worse.
And you're also talking in your letter about the land initiative projects for Dublin City Council, places like at Oscar Traynor Road, St Michael's Estate sites. These are places that have a mix of private and public Involvement. Now, I mean, there's been some criticism that your party actually supported these in the first place.
Yes. Well, the council owns these lands and they will retain ownership. However, they came to what was on offer. What was on offer was a complex arrangement where the private sector would be brought in to an arrangement with the city council in order to provide housing. Now, originally, the proportion of social housing in those developments would only have been 10% under what's called Part 5 of the Planning and Development Act. We ensured that was increased to 30%, that there would be 30% social housing and 20% affordable. Now, we believed and still believe that under current government policy and approach, that was what was on offer. And if that was rejected, we faced zero housing on those lands. So we decided that we would support that. It wasn't our approach. It wasn't our method of providing housing. It was essentially the government's. But we said we wouldn't block it because we wanted to try to provide homes as quickly as possible. Now, in the letter, I have called for an urgent review because we're 2 years on and not a sod has been turned on those sites. So that is not satisfactory. Very far from satisfactory. So we need to see that either progress is made very, very rapidly or it's back to the drawing board.
And on those, that's on those specific sites. But you're saying going forward, you don't think that tax breaks for developers or other models that involve developers should be...
No, absolutely not. And in fact, we've asked that the St. Michael's site, which is also owned by the City Council, should be taken on as a pilot with the homes developed by the council itself. And that's our, and has always been our approach on all council-owned lands. That's what needs to happen. And that's what I stress very strongly in the letter to the Taoiseach.
So you've outlined to the Taoiseach the emergency situation that's here. You've outlined some of the short-term, medium and long-term ways in which you feel in Dublin this can be achieved predominantly through social housing. Do you feel it was a successful meeting with the Taoiseach? What was his response?
Well, I mean, I think I made the points very strongly. I think the letter is very comprehensive. The response from the Taoiseach, it wasn't comprehensive.
But he will respond to you in writing.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
He asked some questions. I put it to him in particular about the situation of landlords selling. And he responded that landlords have the right to sell, and I said, well, of course, property owners have their rights as well, there's no question about that, but tenants do need to be protected, particularly where landlords are in fact not selling and go on to take on other tenants at higher rents. He sent in an acknowledgement, and I expect a comprehensive response from the minister himself, Owen Murphy.
Well, it's a very serious situation indeed, and we await seeing what the Taoiseach's response is to that. Thank you so much for joining us in studio today, Ord Vera, to outline the discussions that you had.
You're very welcome. Fáilte rath.